Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics. From the state capitol in Jefferson City, Missouri, we are joined by the new president of the Missouri Farm Bureau, Garrett Hawkins. Welcome back. Welcome to the show for the first time.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
I feel like you've been on before because right down here, maybe 20, 30 feet down, you hosted a rally talking about private property rights. Tell folks about that, but first I want to know, how did you come to become president of the Missouri Farm Bureau?
Well, let's take a step back.
Yeah.
So again, Garrett Hawkins from Appleton City. That's where I was born and raised. That's where we farm today. My wife, Jennifer.
St. Clair County, correct.
St. Clair County. We're right on the St. Clair-Bates County line.
Gotcha.
My folks farm a mile north of us and are on the Bates-St. Clair-Henry County line. So we're tucked up right up in the corner. Primarily a beef, a commercial cow-calf yep. operation. Hay. We've added sheep to the rotation, but I mean, we are a typical family farm for what you'd expect in Missouri.
Sure.
So my roots in Farm Bureau go way back though, actually
yes.
to all the youth programs. So Collegiate Farm Bureau, the Ambassador Program, the Summer Internship Program. So I've known Farm Bureau, or at least I feel like Farm Bureau members have been a part of my life, like
yeah.
all of adulthood.
It's so kind of a family.
Very yeah. much a family. Very much.
My son Gussie's been a member, I think, all but 2 days of his life.
Well, hey.
Just because I'm bad at internet stuff. So it took a little longer for me than other folks. But it is an interesting family, and what it's got to be a great honor to lead that family. You are the leading voice for rural Missouri now.
Well,
period.
I feel the weight every day when
I'm sure.
I walk into the building and when I'm at home and when I'm traveling around the state. I have always respected Farm Bureau as an organization because of its grassroots structure.
Mm-hmm.
You look around and how many organizations can say that they have a presence in every county of
yep.
the state? And it really is humbling. And when I talk to colleagues outside of agriculture, it's funny, I think in terms of counties. You name a community and I can tell you which county
yep.
it's in, just because that's how we are as Farm Bureau. We are as strong as an organization because that strength comes from the counties
mm-hmm.
on up. And so that's how our policies are developed. And that's what guides me every day as I serve.
And in this building, when something affects rural Missouri, they come to Farm Bureau. As they did for the rally last week. Tell me about the rally and what is the actual issue was pointed at?
Well, there's nothing more fundamental to agriculture and owning land than property rights,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when we think about the awesome power of eminent domain that the government can grant, that's what this whole debate is about. Currently with a merchant transmission line that is going to cross northern Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Now the landowners have engaged in this discussion for 7-8 years now. When this project was first proposed, it changed hands. It's went through the Public Service Commission process 3 times, ultimately to get approval.
Courts and the whole nine yards, yeah.
Well, yes, I mean, there has been the legal component to this, but now we're to the point of the fundamental question, should a private for-profit company, particularly out of state like this, should they be given the power of eminent domain for essentially private gain? That's the question that landowners have, and we truly see this as not just dealing with this merchant transmission line, but really poses the question of what do we want to be as we look forward in the future years of protecting private property rights. So we had about 200 farmers and landowners representing Farm Bureau, Missouri Cattlemen's, the Landowners Alliance, and others that convened here in Jefferson City to ask the legislature once again protect our private property rights. Now we're not saying no to any development.
A lot of those farmers are willing to sell their land for a fair price.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. What we're saying is that said company should negotiate in good faith with landowners.
And why would you have to give a fair price if you know you can just take it at some point anyway?
Well, that is the fundamental question, right? That landowners are asking, and why they're asking their legislators to step up and at least put some teeth and more protections.
Yeah.
We're not saying that it can't happen, but we are saying negotiate in good faith with these landowners.
I think the biggest issue for rural Missouri, maybe every technological advance has always moved people to the cities. Broadband is the first thing that could allow you to, maybe you don't have to live in Kansas City now. You can live in St. Clair County. You can raise your family at a good rural school. You can buy a home, bigger home with some land, maybe get into farming yourself.
Yep.
But you can do that because you have the internet connection.
That's the internet connection
is your lifeline to the rest of the world.
Yep.
You were testifying, twisting arms in Congress for rural broadband. Where is rural broadband? To most folks that try to watch this show, they have to drive to the top of the hill or go to town to watch it on YouTube. Where is the issue at?
We're making progress.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. So yesterday, a subcommittee of the U.S. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee is doing a reauthorization of the Economic Development Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to Farm Bureau and said, okay, we think broadband plays an important role within EDA, and we want you to talk about its importance to agriculture and rural communities. And American Farm Bureau, knowing that Missouri has essentially been an epicenter for some of these discussions, came to us and said, okay, can you trumpet the voice? And so it was an awesome opportunity to talk about, you know, the opportunities for broadband on farm. You know, for a lot of our farmers, including me, you don't know what you don't know. Yep. The technology is out there, but until we have broadband or high-speed internet to the farm gate to then deploy it across the farm, we don't know.
But even if you did know, it wouldn't matter if you didn't have the broadband.
That's right. Yeah. But until you have it in our communities, until you have that foundation to then go out to the farm gate, that's what we're talking about.
It feels like sometimes destiny strikes, clocks strike at the same time. A natural partner forever has been the co-ops of Farm Bureau.
Yes.
And natural folks that have actually provided some of this broadband has been the co-ops. It seems like you have a pretty good relationship with the fellow that runs the co-ops and Caleb Jones, pretty good relationship with you. It seems like some things are coming together with the urgency from the COVID stuff to all sorts of reasons. Is there a bigger issue facing Missouri than rural broadband?
Oh, it's hard to say which one exactly. When you think about economic vitality and our ability to compete, I mean, even in our farming community of Appleton, 1,100 people, okay? Agriculture is the lifeblood. We're fortunate that we still have our critical access hospital, maybe the smallest in the state or one of the smallest. We have a UPS hub. We've got a SureGrow that provides inputs, right? And we've got one of the oldest Ford dealerships in the country. But you know what? That's right. But we're seeing a resurgence of people moving back to the town because they can telecommute if they can find a spot on Main Street. Because once you get off of Main Street, good luck. I mean, we have our farm families who are either using satellite or hotspots.
Netflix ain't real in Stringtown, Missouri, and West Butler County.
That's right.
It ain't real.
So we have to continue to impress upon, and COVID was the prime example, especially, I mean, we saw this all across the state, that our families were using up their cell phone data plans within a matter of days trying to get their kids to do their homework, right? Because they don't have affordable, quality broadband at their home or at their farmstead.
We're talking about the information superhighway, let's talk about the regular highways in rural Missouri.
Yes.
I think, you know, it's easy for a suburban person to prattle on about, you know, quote Edmund Burke or whatever. But the bottom line is, when Highway 5 is crumbling, you can't, it actually matters. It's not free. No one's going to fix those for free. Folks, where is the state of transportation in Missouri? And, you know, Senator Schatz has worked hard. At the time, Senator Kehoe, Senator Libla. It seems like moving that needle is just not even possible.
We've seen some real movement this session.
Yep.
Fingers crossed that we will see what I would characterize as a very unique approach to trying to put in place a modest increase so that we can more adequately fund our roads and bridges, right? So the proposal, I think it's very unique with the refund mechanism that's in place. I know it's been done in South Carolina. I'm holding hope that our General Assembly will see fit that, you know what, this isn't too much to ask.
Is it going to have to be that some of the rural guys say, look, if you want us to vote for you for leadership, you have to pay attention to rural Missouri.
Well,
we ain't just going to be just reading Twitter from Washington and taking orders from suburb folks. If you want our votes for leadership, you're going to have to address our needs.
Well, I appreciate that you touched on the farm to market road first thing, because, I mean, I get it. For those of us that are pulling trailers or driving grain trucks, white knuckle, right? When you see that shoulder crumbling, and again, we know it's hard. This is a tough ask, but at the same time, you're talking about vital roads for economic development, for just maintain, but also from a safety standpoint.
Sure.
Our families travel these roads.
And school buses run those roads.
And school buses travel these roads. Let's get it done.
Let's talk about something that I think is becoming a bigger and bigger part of Missouri politics. Democrats just don't really compete anymore for Farm Bureau members' votes, and more for even labor member unions' votes in places like Jefferson County. So if you want to advance a cause, you go to the IP. It is very easy in Missouri to get on the ballot. And you're seeing just this week with Medicaid, you've had a big tussle dealing with these IPs. It feels like the voters are voting for a party, and then they go to the IPs and they're voting for something else. Is there some way to reform those IPs to make it a little harder to do?
Well, I think there are some very promising proposals that are being considered right in this House, in this General Assembly. You know, and let's separate how we're looking at this issue. Yep. ultimately, what we're asking, what we would support, is raising the threshold for amending the state constitution.
Not eliminating it, right?
Not eliminating.
But making it a little tougher.
But raising the threshold for amending the state constitution. When we have a state constitution that's been amended more times in the last 10 years than the U.S. Constitution in 233 years, maybe we need to stop and ask the question. And is it too much to ask that we look at every congressional district in terms of gathering signatures?
Yeah, those old folks don't come to Donovan. They stand outside of Schnucks in West County. They don't really come down to Bunker too much and try to get folks' signatures.
You're right. I've been through Bunker. It's a good place.
Well, 72. They've actually done some progress in 72. But
they have.
It is interesting how they do write off. And the first place they write off is Southeast Missouri. The next place they'll write off will be like the North Missouri district. It is disproportionately, and it disproportionately every single time, disproportionately cuts out rural Missouri as part of that process.
So I guess I get back to, as we hit the home stretch of this session, as we look at what's on the table, we really need to be careful in separating. Folks, we're talking about safeguarding the sanctity of the state constitution, right? Let's talk about raising that threshold. Let's also have the conversation about this constitution is for Missourians, right? And do we always want big, big name or deep-pocketed out-of-state interest influencing what is ultimately in our state constitution?
I had a little bit of time. I was waiting for Gussie to find his shoes this morning before we come to the Capitol.
Okay.
And I saw the folks that did Medicaid. They had a picture promoting Medicaid, healthcare for all. Wonderful thing. It had every group and type of person. The white guy looked like Joe Dirt. He was wearing, a tank top, no shirt underneath it or over it. He had a mullet and a mustache. It was what a Central West NPR firm would think of me and my son. Maybe if they had to go get signatures from folks in Dexter, they would realize the folks in Palmyra, that ain't representative of them.
Yes.
It was very indicative, I thought, of if your IP process is only scheduled for folks in West County, St. Louis, and Kansas City, you would think that way. And maybe they wouldn't be such severe Medicaid fights over the effects of these IPs if they had to come talk to a few of us.
That's a really interesting observation. But that's another thing. Let's get it to the ballot.
Aaron Hawkins, President of Missouri Farm Bureau, thank you for joining us. Hope you'll come back and talk after session and talk about maybe how we go into the state fair this year. We're going to have a real state fair.
Can't wait. Look forward to seeing you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with our opinion maker panel. Susan Klein with Missouri Right to Life joins us. But first, go to showmissouri.com. This is Missouri One County Time. This week we're talking about Madison County, Missouri, just down Highway 67. Had a great time, a great Civil War history from Madison County. Showmissouri.com. This is Missouri One County Time. We'll be right back after this.
Our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads, because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right-to-work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work.
Welcome this week in Missouri Politics from the state capitol here in Jefferson City. We are joined by Senator Cindy O'Loughlin. Senator, thank you for making the time.
Thank you for having me on.
Susan Klein with Missouri Right to Life. Thank you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Scott, for having me.
Wes Rogers, state representative from Kansas City. Now tell folks where, if they're from the plaza, how do they get to your district?
Go straight north, southwestern Clay County. So downtown airport, Harris Casino, Stroud's.
I know where the casino is. Representative Maggie Nirenberg, welcome to the show. Now tell folks, you're a Kansas City person too?
I am.
How do you get to your spot?
Just straight north of West.
Now, everybody in the whole state can just go north and hit yours. Half of yours, right?
That's right.
However,
a little
you go
bit
north,
east.
You know, the northeast quarter of the state. Senator, explain to me, you have folks that voted for Medicaid expansion. I think that most people that voted for that didn't get in the technical weeds, as most regular people don't. The state legislators decided not to fund the Medicaid expansion. You're going to fund Medicaid, so if you're on Medicaid now, it's going to be funded, but they're not going to fund the additional folks. Walk folks through and explain to them the reasons why you chose not to fund the Medicaid vote.
Well, I think first of all, people have to understand the initiative petition process. So the legislature has consistently refused to expand Medicaid for several years. And the reason they have done that is that it's kind of like a runaway train going downhill. So people who get on Medicaid or get on an entitlement system almost never come off. Now, part of that is because the rules that surround it stop them from coming off. So Medicaid has a lot of things about it that we feel need to be reformed. I'm not sure why we haven't made more progress, but one of those things is if you do work, you have what is called the cliff effect. And if you make a dollar over an arbitrary amount that is set by the government, then they'll take everything away from you. Mm-hmm. Then people cannot afford to work. So that is just one thing. I personally, in my 14 county area, overwhelmingly, they defeated Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. There were some people who voted for it. And I will say that I think we have, through government action, created an environment where we do have working poor people who cannot afford insurance. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the answer is to put them on a government entitlement that is very expensive. Even if the federal government says, you know, we'll pay 90% of it to start out, maybe next year they'll say, this year we'll only pay 50% because we all know the federal government is broke. So that is not the answer. But what is the answer is to create an environment where we go back to a system where people can purchase their own insurance at an affordable price. Before Obamacare, a young man, for instance, 25 years old, could buy a health insurance policy for about $125 a month. Now they can't get one at all.
So you're convinced this session, this issue is moot, you're gonna wait and see what the court says, correct?
We're not going to expand Medicaid.
All right, so you're a person, Chiefs fan, getting ready for a summer camp to start. You voted for Medicaid, you didn't think another thing about it. Make the case for why they should have funded it.
So yeah, and my district was different. We had over 60% of my constituents voted expand Medicaid. That was an easy choice for me to back the will of my voters. But what I'll say on that is, and as a small business owner, I do look at it from the business side of it. And you know, right now there's 130,000 Missourians unemployed and looking for work. The chamber says that over the next 5 years, this would create 80,000 new jobs, most of which would be in rural Missouri, most of which would be outside of healthcare. So you're talking about, to me, a jobs bill that would have cut our unemployment rate in half. And to me, that was the most persuasive part about it.
So Representative, you're new to the legislature, but normally when you're voting on a bill, the business community probably isn't on your side. This time they were.
From the very beginning. So here we are over a decade, and I tell you what, yes, I'm new to the legislature, but I've been watching this for a long time, and we've seen, you know, Republicans in the state do everything they can to drag their feet on this issue. Finally, it went to the will of the people. 53% of voters voted for it. The governor put it in his budget. There's the money there to fund this. Everybody knows it. And once again, instead of the legislature taking care of their business, we're going to leave it to the courts. And we're going to have to turn to the courts to see this finally get done.
Susan Glenn, I have a theory about this. If the Democratic Party and the Republican Party were more closely pitched in this state, the Republicans would have had a harder time doing this. Now, maybe they still do it, but it would have been a little tougher. I think guns and abortion are the issues where the state's always been pro-life, always been pro-gun. The Democrat Party's moved away from those positions. The Republican Party has maybe stepped a little closer towards them. And because of work like yours, there's no Republican that's going to face a negative electoral backlash from this.
I agree. They're not going to face a backlash. Missouri is a very pro-life state. The makeup of the body of the legislature, I think, shows that. We have supermajorities in the House and supermajorities in the Senate. I think they work very hard to make sure that innocent babies are, their lives are saved, and also protect moms who are pregnant.
I think dating back to the 70s, you had a pro-life supermajority. It's pro-gun supermajority. Now it's just aligned by party.
Well, over time, we have seen, we used to have pro-life Democrats.
Yeah.
And you know, definition of pro-life is, you know,
McKenna,
to protect.
The Matheson, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Lukenhaus, Ted House, that carried the ban on partial birth abortion back in the late 90s. You know, so they were. And Ben Harris, who just recently left, was a pro-life Democrat. But right now, we don't have any pro-life Democrats that stand up for the Missouri right to life positions that we take, which we work really hard at. We look, we have lawyers both here in Missouri and also in Washington that look at the language and make sure that that lives are protected based on what the courts have said that we can do. So we work really hard at that. Now, our involvement with Medicaid expansion is dealing with the current administration and whether the Hyde Amendment will stay in place or not. You know, a lot of times pro-life people...
The Hyde Amendment says you can't spend public money on abortion, correct?
Correct. Yeah, so, and it's an annual rider that has to be put on. So our concern is, based on the makeup of Congress and the U.S. Senate and the presidency, that the Hyde Amendment is at stake, and whether abortions will be, you know, at anybody's whim, based on who, you know, how the Medicaid expansion rolls are expanded. If you put 250 extra people on Medicaid expansion, on the rolls in Missouri, you know, a lot of those people are going to be of childbearing age. And so our concern is that, you know, if you just open up no boundaries and allow for abortion to be, you know, had from by anybody with no boundaries, then our federal tax dollars are going to be used to pay for abortion.
Give me a prediction.
We don't
here.
Want that.
I'll start with you, Senator. If the dynamic doesn't change nationally, if the guns and abortion issues stay like they are, will any Republican that voted against Medicaid expansion pay a price at the polls? Will they lose?
No.
What do you think?
No, they will not.
What do you think?
Well, Jean Evans actually tweeted the other day that she's concerned that this will hurt in the suburban and exurban areas. I'm not sure I'm with her on the exurban piece of that, but I think there may be some backlash, at least in the suburban districts.
Well, it is a logical case to make that the folks were for this, you voted against it, right?
You know, when we're talking about groups, we've already named the Missouri Chamber of Commerce. Let's talk about the Missouri Catholic Conference. They're okay for this. And they sent us another letter and said, hey, this is what we are asking for. You want to talk about life? Let's make sure that we're protecting all Missourians. And, you know, I think the Medicaid expansion, that's what the voters did. I got to remind people again, this wasn't just suburban districts. This wasn't just urban districts. 1 in 3 rural voters voted for this as well because they knew it was the right thing to do and the fiscally responsible thing to do.
A year and a half from now, can you take this on a pamphlet to a district in suburban Missouri and flip a seat over it?
Absolutely. And we
Now we're taping this, so I'm gonna have you back.
And, I'm glad it's taped because we will win seats with this.
Well, let me tell you something that was taped, Senator, and that was your speech about COVID. It was getting on about a year ago. You took to the Senate floor. Not that COVID is not a very serious thing. Not that people haven't died and it should be taken seriously. Your speech was about, are we going too far? A lot of folks like that. I thought it was great. I think I would dare say very few folks in your district didn't like it. Tell me about the state of COVID now and where things are in your neck of the woods.
Well, I mean, when COVID first appeared on the scene, people didn't know what to expect. But it wasn't all that long after we had identified it and we started looking at statistics. And by the middle of the summer, people realized that you had a 99% chance of surviving it. Well, a 99% chance of surviving something is better odds than when you get in your car and drive to work.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was the government, as government often does, overreacts and starts to try to step into the private marketplace and take control to keep everyone safe. And the result of that was we shut down private businesses, we drove people out of business, we created a panic within the populace that exists to this day to some extent. Mm-hmm. Now, people after, you know, 6 months, 7 months, we had the 10 or 15 days or whatever it was to flatten the curve, started thinking, after about 6 months, you start thinking, come on, we're not, you know, it can be deathly to some people, but the vast majority of people for whom it was very severe were over the age of 70 and had underlying conditions.
Sure.
And we did not report any of the statistics in a way that helped give the public confidence that, listen, we're going to survive this and we can go on. We're smart enough to take safety measures on our own.
Representative, Where do you think things are in your neck of the woods? I know that folks in your neck of the woods are going to be a lot more concerned about COVID, and they're going to want more restrictions. But I saw Quentin Lucas even is starting to ease restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think from the beginning, we've tried to have a very measured approach, and I think everybody appreciates that. So up until December, I was a teacher in the classroom. I was in North Kansas City schools. And again, I, as a mom, as a teacher, I wanted kids back in seat when it was safe to do so. And we were able to do that in August by spreading people out, by having a hybrid schedule. You know what? Now the fact is we have vaccinations open to everybody in the state, yep. 16 and older. So what have we done? Kids are back in seat. You know, that's what I think has been so important from the beginning. Let's look where we are. Let's follow the numbers. But yes, we have a need to have a measured approach. Schools should be open. Businesses should be open. Everybody get vaccinated. We can keep it open.
If the vaccine works and you take the vaccine, shouldn't you be left alone?
I agree. I think Governor Parson did a great job in making sure that the people in the communities around the state of Missouri had the opportunity to do what was necessary in their areas. And you know, people want to get back to normal. They're tired of wearing masks, they're tired of being socially distanced, they're tired of being told that they can't have their 4th of July celebration. You know, it's like, what, are you going to come in and police us?
Well, luckily Vince Lambie in Butler County just kind of opted out of all that. What do you think? I mean, I think it's getting to the point where if you're continuing these restrictions, folks are going to think you're crying wolf next time.
So a couple of things. One is I got COVID and it was asymptomatic at first, but you know, now it's, you know, still short of breath sometimes, like walking up here, one flight of stairs, I was huffing and puffing a little bit. So even if it's not life or death, it is
You've
not
been
that
sitting
much
around
fun.
Too much at the cap.
Yeah, that's probably part of it too, yeah. And then I got my shot. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm done with it. It's my choice not to wear a mask. I'm ready to move on. Yep. I'm a small business owner. We're counting on our restaurants and hotels to be open. At this point, if you want a vaccine, you've got access to it. So to me, it's time to rock and roll.
Can't let you leave, Senator. You were at the after the budget's done, folks are going to turn to education reform. You've been at the front of that fight in the Senate. Give me a prediction on whether there's going to be an education reform bill out of the General Assembly this session.
Well, I mean, I think the odds are that we will reform something. Education reform is usually met with some pretty stiff resistance from people in the education community. But I don't think it needs to be that way. And I'm working with people on both sides of the aisle. I'm going to schools and listening to what they're doing. And I think if we just gather some input and let people know, listen, we're not here to tear down public schools. We just want to help improve the outcome.
With a minute left, who won the week?
Without a doubt, Madam Vice President, Madam Speaker. I tell you what, that was a powerful first. And it won't be the last.
A cool visual. Who won the week?
David Tyson Smith, our new state representative from Columbia, got sworn in today.
Historic. Who won the week?
I think the children of Missouri, foster families, and pregnant moms.
That's cool. Who won the week?
I think the community colleges, for maybe the first time since I've been here, they got a core increase in funding. And while we talk about how important they are and what a great job they do, they're usually at the end of the list.
Go Three Rivers Raiders. I'm going to say a representative from Southwest Missouri, Dirk Deaton. He took up the longstanding tradition of Southwest Missouri folks of taking care of the Capitol and Capitol improvements. It is something that he inherits from Ron Richard and a long list of folks who care about this program. I see you the week. Hope you'll win the week next week by joining us back in our St. Louis studios on This Week in Missouri Politics.
The Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, SPIRE, and Sterling Bank.